We also have a St. David's Day concert preview for our Newsmaker 3 in about 20 minutes from now. Emporia High State Wrestling coverage starting up right around 9 o'clock this morning. Play-by-play all day on KVUE and KVUE.com. And that will lead us into Emporia High Basketball doubleheader action at Junction City tonight, with coverage starting at 5:45 p.m. For the latest local information on the air and on the web, stay tuned to KVOE or log on to KVOE.com. From the 24-hour KVOE newsroom, I'm Chuck Samples.
Thanks, Chuck. News brought to you by Emporia State University. Hands-on learning that prepares students for successful careers. Discover the possibilities at Emporia.edu. Stingers up, ESU. It is 8:19, and before we get to the congressman, what about that weekend weather, Chuck?
Well, feeling an awful lot like mid-spring here the next couple of days, including today with sunshine and 75, a very high fire danger today with a west breeze up around 20 miles per hour. Clear skies tonight, 44. Similar conditions tomorrow, 73 with sunshine. And as mentioned, Sunday, kind of a reset back to late winter. Freezing rain possible in the morning. Rain likely all day with a high of 44. Monday, chance of rain in the afternoon, a high of 45.
Right now, sunshine 43 here at KVOE, live and local. Good morning. It's 8:20.
KVOE, 1400 AM and 96.9 FM, live and local. This is Newsmaker 2.
And we're glad to have with us Kansas 2nd District Congressman Derek Schmidt with a number of talking points here. A lot of them having to do with the recent State of the Union, but also some with legislation that Schmidt has brought to the table here this week.
Congressman, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Doing well. Thanks for having me back on.
And glad to have you on. How busy has the week been, especially given the State of the Union address here a couple of days back?
Well, it turned out to be sort of a truncated week. There was bad weather on the East Coast on Monday, and some of our members couldn't get into Washington because they were snowed in New England or elsewhere. And so things got really compressed because Monday's workflow to Tuesday. Tuesday was the State of the Union, and then we sort of picked up parts the rest of the week. So it's been good, but there's been a lot going on.
Well, I guess let's dive into at least a couple of the points that President Trump made in his State of the Union speech, and one of which happens to do with the overall economy. I know the president had mentioned, I think in large terms, the economy is going well, but a lot of people seem to be struggling with the day-to-day operations, whether it's grocery purchases, gas prices are starting to pop up again. So, question comes up, is there some sort of a disconnect that's in place, or is the economy better than a lot of people may be seeing?
Yeah, it's that word affordability, isn't it?
That word affordability.
It is. I think we're not where we need to be. The trend line is generally in the right direction, but we're not where we need to be. I thought one of the things the president did well was remind everybody where we've come from over the last year. We had inflation at its peak. It was up around 9% a year. In the Biden years, it was still running up around 5, as I recall, when President Biden left office. It's now running at about 2.5. That's still more than we'd like, but it's a whole lot better than it was. So the trend line is in the right direction. You look at overall federal spending, it's still going up, but it's going up at a slower rate than it was a year ago. So that's moving in the right direction. You look at the tax load, still argue it's plenty high, but big tax increase that was scheduled for the first of this year, we got canceled, and we have additional tax relief on tips, overtime, Social Security, some other provisions, and people are starting to feel that as they fill out their tax returns this year, so moving in the right direction. Even if you look at some of the things we don't control directly, you can't pass a law on this, but certainly the overall economic conditions are affected by these things. Interest rates have started to move back down, mortgage rates in particular. That's good. They're still too high, but they're moving in the right direction. Real wages have started to move up. That's, of course, the rate at which people's income is growing faster than the costs are growing. They're still both growing, but one is starting to catch up with the other. That's a good sign. First time that's been true in a very long time. The stock market obviously is very high for folks who are invested in the market. That's not just rich folks. It's almost everybody who has some type of a retirement plan. And so, the indicators look good, but there's no doubt people in the real world that I represent, still a lot of people having trouble making ends meet, and they feel it, and we've got to keep working on these things.
One of the things, I look at the grocery bill, and I see ground beef is kind of my indicator, and I see that price has jumped more than double, I think, since the past year. And then, some other things have gone down over the last year, or they've stayed pretty steady, but it does seem certain items are either in shorter supply or the prices have definitely jumped.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there are some just in the grocery cart, there are some items up, some items down. Eggs are certainly down below where they were a year ago. That's a good sign. But you mentioned beef, whether it's ground beef or other cuts. That's certainly true. That's largely a function of these sort of longer-term cycles that we see in the beef industry. I mean, we had a lot of years of drought. People liquidated the provisions of their herd. The overall herd now is at very low levels compared to where it typically is. And, of course, when you have less, you wind up with prices going up. And those are the principal drivers. That's going to remedy itself over time. I think we need more government intrusion, trying to tell beef producers, you know, what they need to do and how they need to produce. And if you happen to be somebody who's selling cattle right now, your input costs are up, but your sales costs look pretty good. So, you know, there's different aspects of it that affect us in Kansas. But you're exactly right. As you say, there are some things that are better than they were a year ago. Some things haven't made as much progress. Beef prices are one for the consumer. But overall, I think the trend lines have moved in the right direction.
Speaking of little progress, what about the shutdown? We've got the temporary government shutdown. The Senate Democrats blocked the Department of Homeland Security funding bill for a second time on Tuesday. I think the vote was like 50-45 to advance the House-passed DHS bill that you supported. You think we're going to see any movement on that?
Well, I hope so. I hope soon. It's very frustrating. It's all politics. We had agreement, bipartisan, bicameral. Senator Schumer had signed off. Leader Jeffries had signed off. The Republicans and the President had all signed off on a Homeland Security funding bill. We passed it in the House. As you point out, I voted for it to keep things going. And then the Senate Democrats had a change of heart and reneged on the deal. And they've locked everything down since then and haven't really been interested in serious negotiations. This ultimately boils down to Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are going to have to reach an agreement with President Trump. That's the way out of this thing. It's unclear exactly what the scope of the demands are. We know it relates to the immigration enforcement provisions, but the targets seem to be moving, if you will. The goalposts seem to be moving, whatever metaphor you want. So we're all watching this discussion. Eventually some agreement will be reached, and we'll pass funding for the Department of Homeland Security. But the irony in all this, which I think is what, when I say it's all politics, the thing that's so frustrating, the bill we sent them actually limited funding for ICE and for Customs and Border Patrol, and it required reforms, had body cameras in it, and had de-escalation training in it, both of which I think are sorely needed. So by killing the bill that we sent them, they actually killed reforms and remove the limitations on funding, because those two agencies are already funded at functionally unlimited levels, thanks to funding that was put on the table last summer. All they've really done is taken hostage all the other agencies that nobody's mad at. They've taken hostage FEMA. They've taken hostage Transportation Security Agency. The folks that keep us safe when we get on an airplane are working without paychecks right now. They've taken hostage the Secret Service. They've taken hostage the Coast Guard. It's very frustrating. And it's not really a rational position, but it's where we are right now.
If you don't mind, Congressman, let me use this as a tangent to get into legislation that you've introduced here in the House. It's H.R. 7664, the State Partnerships to Enhance Removal of Criminal Aliens Act. And I know it's a little bit of a tangent, but talk about the bill to strengthen the state-level cooperations or maybe even a little bit further down locally to federal immigration enforcement.
Well, we're at a point in time where so much of the immigration debate, the border security debate, and the immigration enforcement debate seems to be people shouting at each other about broad principles. And I suppose that's fine if that's where the country is, that's where people want to be, I suppose, you know, that's fine. But the solutions that actually fix things are usually much more down in the weeds and technical if they're meaningful. And that's the sort of the space we're trying to occupy here. The principle is that if you're in the country illegally, you should not be here and you are subject to removal. The principle is that you can't just remove everybody all the time. The numbers don't bear it out. You have to set enforcement priorities. That's just common sense. And the principle is that the vast majority of people I talk with think that it just makes sense that your first priority ought to be removing from the country people who are here illegally in violation of our immigration laws. And while they're here, they commit other crimes. Everybody agrees that's a logical place to start, regardless of their views on these other issues and how far you go. But in order to do that, we've got to fix some things that aren't terribly exciting but really matter. So, for example, something like 90-95% of the crimes committed in this country are handled in state court by state law enforcement, state prosecutors. They're state crimes. If you commit a DUI, if you commit an armed robbery, if you commit theft, if you commit assault, if you commit murder, those are state crimes in almost every case. And yet the law that says if you commit those crimes, you're supposed to be removed from the country if you're in the country illegally, that's federal law, and the states don't really have a role in it. Well, that means you've got to have cooperation between state and federal authorities to make the system work. In Kansas, we generally do. It's pretty good. But in other parts of the country, it just doesn't work at all. So this bill we've introduced is aimed at fixing one part of that. It's aimed at authorizing state criminal justice officials who are willing, it's voluntary, not forcing states to do anything, but if you have a willing state partner, if they want to go ahead and set in motion the federal paperwork that leads to a deportation order, an order of removal for somebody that they just convicted in state court of a state crime, they can do it. So you don't have this issue of the state does their thing, they're in one silo, and then you wait for the feds to come and file the immigration paperwork, and sometimes the federal bureaucracy doesn't catch up in time, and then you wind up with the issue of people being released from state and county jails that aren't, you know, the I's aren't dotted and the T's aren't crossed for removal from the country, and then you got a mess. So we're trying to fix that, and you know, we'll see where the bill goes, but it's been well received so far.
Again, Kansas 2nd District Congressman Derek Schmidt with his monthly visit here on KVOE. Something else that came up in the State of the Union, and that is the Save America Act. I know the Democrats have widely opposed this, but this is legislation that would require Americans to show proof of citizenship in person to register to vote in federal elections. Your take on that, Congressman?
Well, I support it. I voted for it. And it's sort of funny in Kansas. You know, there are two provisions in this bill, the Save America Act. One is it would say for federal elections anywhere in the country, when you show up on election day to vote, you've got to show your usually your driver's license. You've got to show a photo ID that says, this is me, I'm Derek Schmidt, you can see I'm on the voter rolls and I can vote. We do that in Kansas. That's been state law for many years, but it's not law in every state. And so this is an effort to make it law in every state, at least as to federal elections. We know it works, and people are used to it in Kansas, no change. The other provision is that the first time you register to vote, not when you show up on the polls on election day, but when you go down to the county clerk's office or the election office and you register to vote, say, I'm Derek Schmidt, and I want to be on the voter roll so that I can vote in the elections. When you do that, it's already required that you be a U.S. citizen, but the way that's confirmed is just you sign a piece of paper attesting I'm a U.S. citizen. This law would require that you show some type of documentation to prove that you are a U.S. citizen. And here's the irony. That is a law on the books in the state of Kansas. It was actually adopted by an overwhelming bipartisan majority. Democrats voted for it in the state legislature in Topeka. Republicans did, too. It's not enforced in Kansas because there was a lawsuit filed that ultimately resulted in an injunction blocking its enforcement. But my point is, Kansans, it's never been repealed. Kansans have voted for that, Republicans and Democrats. They thought it was common sense, and so I've supported it at the federal level as well.
I'm going to shift again, and this is a headline that just, you know, started hitting, I think, late yesterday or this morning on our national, international news partner, ABC News, about the possible thoughts of maybe some election process changes with the way it sounds is that some advisors to President Trump are encouraging maybe an executive order to change the election process is based off of a China-based national emergency from a couple of years ago. Is this something that how accurate is this reporting, and is this something that you would advise the president to pursue?
Well, I have no idea how accurate it is. I mean, there's headlines every day, and you know, some fraction of them are correct, and some fraction of them just are, you know, completely fabricated. They're based on some strange source that doesn't really know what they're talking about. I don't know what this is, but I don't think we need any type of emergency related to the elections.
Again, we're joined by Kansas Congressman Derek Schmidt. This is his monthly visit here to KVOE. One of the other topics that came up was really not domestic. It was international. It was Iran. And there's always been, I think, since the late 70s and even before the Iran hostage crisis, 79 and 80, the tensions between these two countries. And clearly those tensions are revving up again here recently. From your perspective, is this the time to maybe be considering possible strikes against Iran, given the nuclear capabilities that that country has been trying to generate for a long period of time?
Well, I'm listening very carefully to what the administration, our administration, is saying on this, particularly related to the military buildup in the region. I'm also listening very carefully to what Kansans are telling me on this. Kansans don't want to see another American long-term military engagement in the Middle East. We just came off of America's longest war in the region, and I certainly don't want to see that happen again. I don't want to see a single American killed in hostile action in the Middle East or in Iran. We also, of course, cannot stand for Iran to have a nuclear weapon and the means to deliver it, particularly if those means allow it to deliver missile material to the United States or to our bases in Europe or in the Middle East. And so, you know, sorting through exactly what the facts are, what is part of a negotiation, and what is an actual preparation for military action, I think that's difficult, and I'm still trying to figure kind of what the right angle here is. I don't want to do anything that undermines the president's ability to get the Iranians to agree to what we've long sought to get them to agree to, which is to stop efforts to develop and operate a nuclear program that creates material that can be used for bombs, and to stop the development of a rocket program that has the ability to deliver that type of material to the United States, to Europe, or elsewhere. So I don't want to do anything that undermines the president's ability to advance those long-term bipartisan objectives. I also don't want to see a single American lose their life in combat in the Middle East.
Well, Congressman, as always, we appreciate your time very much. Look forward to our monthly visits.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Good to talk to you. Have a good day. Kansas 2nd District Congressman Derek Schmidt with us, a monthly visit here, KVOE Live and Local. Chuck?
Yeah, and we're grateful for the congressman's time and his willingness to, you know, answer the questions that we have.